Good morning and welcome to this month's Hancock & Whitney Bank's Economic Update Call. Hancock Bank and Whitney Bank provide this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during this call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or its affiliates. On today's call, we have investment directors Richard Chauvin, Greg Hodleski, and Jeffrey Tangus, and Chief Investment Officer David Lundgren.
Thank you, Ashley, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to this month's Market and Economic Update Call. Obviously, it's been an exciting six trading sessions. We went from having a fantastic January. As of January 26th, I think the market was up a little bit over 7%. And then 6 days after that, we wiped out a fair amount of those gains and then some. Greg Hodleski is going to talk in detail about recent market activity, give his thoughts around where we are, the whys and hows, and where we go from here. But I wanted to start off with what we think is not a contributing factor, and that's the economy. And obviously that's an important factor. We've obviously are always evaluating where things stand from an economic standpoint and really don't see any signs of us slipping into recession or economic trends rolling over. We're still in a very healthy environment on many fronts. We've had three consecutive quarters of GDP around 3%, which compared to where we've been since the financial crisis is above average. Fourth quarter GDP came in a little bit less than expected. We got that reading last week, came in about 2.6%. We'll have a couple more revisions to that number, but still healthy. And so far in 2018, I'd say things have even seemed to have improved from where we were in 2017. And as we've talked about on many of these calls, I think tax reform is a contributing factor. But, you know, one of the things when you're talking about economic growth, a lot of it is driven by the consumer. About two-thirds of GDP is consumer-driven. And things from a consumer standpoint are very positive. You know, really, when you think about the consumer, you think about jobs. And, you know, from a job market standpoint, I think things look pretty promising. Jobless claims have been averaging around $230,000, multi-year low in terms of jobless claims. We've added 430,000 jobs over the last 2 months. That is a very big number compared to historical averages. The unemployment rate, and, you know, as we've talked about in past calls, there is, you know, some issues around that number given the amount of underemployed, but still, very healthy, 4.1%, also a multi-year low. And I definitely think when you look at those three together, it's fair to say we're at full employment. And in December, for the first time, we really, you know, seem to see signs of wage growth. We've been in a pretty strong jobs market for a while, but we're beginning to see wages increase. Also, along with tax reform, 300 companies roughly announced either one-time bonuses or pay raises as a function of tax reform. A lot of that is beginning to hit paychecks now, so that's promising for first quarter GDP. We're also seeing withholding adjustments hitting paychecks. Beginning this month and into next month for the first time. So all of those should boost consumer spending. Sentiment data or you know, in basic terms, how do people feel about economic prospects? Consumer confidence remains at multi-year highs. When you look at company surveys, you know, pretty much across the board, whether it's technology companies, airlines, retailers, manufacturing, all are trending up in terms of their surveys on how they feel about their prospects going forward. So that's positive. What we don't know, and you know, what we need to kind of keep an eye on is does the recent market action begin to hit on some of those sentiment numbers, and in turn, you know, it almost becomes circular where the market sell-off reduces confidence, which in turn reduces economic activity, more sell-off. We don't think that's the case. We really don't. But it's definitely something worth keeping an eye on to see, you know, what impact the sell-off may have on the economy. But, you know, again, I think we're in a healthy environment from an economic standpoint. John Porwood over the years has talked about the Atlanta Fed GDP Now, which is basically a forecasting tool. It takes hard data as that information comes in and tries to predict what the current quarter's GDP will be. And, you know, granted, we're only not even halfway through the quarter yet, and it's forecasting a first quarter GDP of 5.4%. You can go ahead and throw that number out the window. We're not going to do 5.4%. I feel very confident in saying that. But it does tell me that the data to this point has been very strong. You know, we're likely to see first quarter GDP three of the last 4 years has been less than 1.5%. So, you know, we'll see if that trend gets busted this quarter. And, you know, I think a lot of economists believe that we're going to be somewhere in that 2.5 to 3% range. And again, the data so far supports that. So, with all that said, I'm going to turn it over to Greg. You know, Greg, it's been interesting. I mentioned in my opening comments, we got off to a roaring start after a great 2017, and then sort of almost out of the blue, we've seen this, you know, pretty significant sell-off. I think it's 8 to 10%, depending on the point in time that you're looking at. So I guess, first of all, you know, what are your thoughts on why is this happening? What do you think is the cause?
Yeah, good morning. Well, first of all, let's just put things in perspective, I think, or look at the decline in perspective. I find it frustrating. CNN had reported yesterday afternoon very frantically that the 1,175-point drop in the Dow was the worst in history, you know. You know, why news outlets, and they're not the only one, continue to point out what the Dow Jones Index does is somewhat irrelevant in my opinion. The Dow is an index made up of only 30 stocks, and, you know, at one point it did represent the stock market, but these days the market is considerably larger, so really better measures for market action and declines and increases are broader indices such as the Russell 1000, the S&P 500 for larger stocks, and the Russell 2000 or S&P 600 for smaller stocks. And, of course, these days there's an index to cover just about anything, styles, value growth, and we talk about that every month. Secondly, point drops are really not what matters. The percentage drop or increase is really what matters to investors. The Dow dropped, just again speaking of yesterday's drop, dropped 4.6%. The Russell 1000, 4%. S&P 500 was down about 4.1%. The Russell 2000 down 3.6%. And the S&P 600 down about 3.7%. So large caps declined a little bit more than small caps. Historically, you know, let's put it again in another perspective. Historically, let's say the Dow dropped the 1,175 at the year end of 1999. Now, where the Dow was at that point in time, that same point drop would have translated into a 10.2% drop in value. So, considerably larger. But you know, the Dow now has grown in value. So again, the percentage really is what investors should focus on. And a 3 and 4% drop is not that unusual. We've been in a very artificially low volatility environment, and we're only even seeing these 1 and 2% days. We finally had about, you know, 3 and 4% days. So what triggered the drawdown? There's a number of Wall Street analysts are pointing to several things that may have started the selling. One, ex-Fed chairperson Janet Yellen, you know, she's out. We've got a new guy in, and she suggested, though, that markets are overvalued. Now, that's not something that's new. Anybody who's listening to these calls regularly, we are always talking that, you know, P.E. ratios are considerably higher, and they're really not particularly good in terms of market timing or trying to time the markets, but it does suggest that stocks are higher priced. And, again, we've talked about this in the past. When interest rates are low, there tends to be that opposite or inverse relationship between P.E. ratios and interest rates. Two, the Federal Reserve recently announced that inflation will move higher in 2018 this year and probably settle around 2%. So there's an inflation scare, or at least that's what they're suggesting. And, of course, bond yields moved up in relation to that. We also had, although corporate earnings are very strong and are very solid, and as you pointed out, Dave, the underlying fundamentals of the economy still, you know, seem sound and getting stronger. We had a few high-profile companies that missed earnings expectations and, you know, that disappointed Wall Street. But I think you could also argue that, and some of these were the high-flying tech companies that we've seen driving the markets, were really priced to perfection. And analysts, what we call bottom-up analysts, who look at companies from the bottom as opposed from the macroeconomic standpoint, are always either overestimating or underestimating companies' earnings results. And I think with the performance of those companies, they were really expecting nirvana in terms of earnings reports. And if they fall slightly short, you know, they're punished or at least admonished in the market. So in the end, January was a very strong month in the stock market, and it could simply just be profit-taking. Obviously, we've had such a long run in this bull market, and with very, very few pullbacks, and it might have just been time, if you just look at a price chart of, you know, market indices, you know, January really did take off. And if we just look at some of the numbers for the month ending January, that year-to-date number, the S&P 500 was up 5.7%. The Dow was up 5.9%. S&P mid-cap 400 stocks were up 2.9%. And small caps were up 2.5. So that trend we saw last year, again, with the large outperforming the mid, outperforming the small, remains intact. And, again, larger caps did quite well. And that's a pretty seriously big increase for the month. If you start looking at styles again, as we usually look at growth versus value, and, of course, we saw such a disparity last year, between growth and value stocks, and we probably won't need to get into it again there, but with a slower growth economy, growth tends to do a little bit better. But we did see growth continue to be strong, 7.23 for the month versus value at 4.15. The spread's not quite as large as we saw over the past year. In terms of sectors, consumer discretionary took the lead this year, and they were up 9.34%. Technology, which was the strongest performing sector for last year, was up 7.6%, and healthcare was up 6.7%. The weaker sectors of S&P 500 sectors were telecom, up about 0.5%. Real estate, the newly created sector, was down almost 2%, and then utilities down about 3%. So favoring consumer discretionary, which, you know, would kind of tie in with what you mentioned about consumer spending. We're seeing that maybe reflected, or at least the anticipation that that's an area that could do well. International also did well. Developed markets were up nearly 5%. A stronger area was emerging markets. They were up 8.6%, and then what we call frontier markets, which are even smaller developing markets in the international scene below emerging markets, they were up also about 8% themselves. So strong equity performance. I still think that things are intact. If you look at the average drawdown or kind of pullback, we haven't seen one, as I said, in a long time. And as you pointed out, depending on your time frame, and we're looking at declines since the most recent highs in large cap stocks, which were around January 26, you're looking at almost an 8% decline both in the Russell 1000 and the S&P 500 through yesterday's close. So that's kind of typical for a pullback. And although we've only seen it over, you know, a number of days, typically those pullbacks can last up to 17 days. And so history at least would suggest that perhaps this is nearly over unless, you know, some other unknown news comes out. But not too much concern at this point. Kind of actually, this is kind of a healthy development.
Okay. Well, thank you, Greg, for those comments. And we'll now chat with Jeff Tangus. Jeff, the bond market obviously has seen a fair amount of volatility as well. You know, prior to the big sell-off, rates had really jumped on the long end of the curve. Saw a bit of flight to quality over the last couple days. But definitely the trend on the longer end of the curve has been up. We didn't quite hit 3%. Well, we got close to it. Talk to us a little bit about, maybe start off talking about the long end of the curve, and then we actually had somebody email a question in that wanted to talk about the Fed and, you know, if we continue to see stock market volatility, will that maybe slow down the tightening phase? So, Jeff?
Sure, Dave. Good morning. Well, as everyone knows, the Federal Reserve has been raising rates on the short end for actually a couple years now, going back to 2015. The long end, though, and when we say the long end, we're really talking out about the Treasury 10-year. That's become the bellwether for what we call long interest rates. But while shorter rates were rising, longer-term rates really had not risen. And as we've talked about in meetings past, that's because the Fed doesn't really control long rates. The market controls long rates, and it controls it based on primarily what they think inflation is going to happen. So, I guess what we have to always remember is we really have been in an abnormal environment now, going back to the credit crisis, whereby rates were at near zero for a long time. And inflation expectations were very low, primarily because the U.S. wasn't seeing a whole lot of wage inflation, and global economies around the world were sluggish. Well, fast forward to around the time of the end of last year when we passed tax reform, it became apparent that the U.S. economy was really starting to get traction. Inflation expectations were starting to rise from very low levels to something that I would again call normal, as the Fed has been trying to get inflation up to 2%. And depending upon which measure of inflation you want to use, most people are familiar with the CPI, the Consumer Price Index. The Fed uses something else called the Personal Consumption Expenditures, PCE. It's a little different calculation, normally comes in a little lower. But regardless, inflation has still been difficult to get to that 2% level. Recently, we've been getting closer, and that's primarily because things here in the U.S. were getting better. That's for sure. Global economies have been getting better as well. Europe certainly is a great example of that, but everywhere around the world, for the first time since the credit crisis, virtually every major economy around the world was in growth mode, and we haven't seen that since the credit crisis. So the entire globe was in an economic upswing. More economic activity means more demand for everything. Labor as well as commodities. So that tends to make people think that inflation may be in the offing if all economies are starting to get better. So that was a part of the equation. Also working into the equation is the Fed is reversing through what they call quantitative tightening, the opposite of quantitative easing, which they did years back. The Fed is in the process of unwinding some of its bond buying programs where they're actually getting out of that, and that has a modest impact of making longer rates increase as well. We know oil has stabilized. which also filters into the inflation equation. So, you know, in short, things are returning to normal, economically speaking, and we're returning to more normal relationships in the economy as well as in the investment markets. So all that means that the near zero interest rates, both on the short and the long end, really are moving into the past, and we're going into a more normal phase. So I think that's the first comment, and the most important comment in all this is that we're really returning to normal in all this. But beyond that, I guess the question, okay, well, why is the 10-year headed towards 3%? You know, we traded down much, much lower than that less than a year ago. And the simple equation is, if you just take 2% inflation, investors typically require a premium over inflation for investing longer term. And so while when people had very low inflation expectations and didn't really think inflation was likely to rise, they were willing to accept something, a lower return. Well, now that we're returning to normal, some of those old relationships are coming back into focus, and so people, if you've got 2% inflation, people want to earn 3 or maybe even a higher number than 3. But for the time being, it appears that something around 3% is a fair return on a 10-year in an environment where you don't expect rapidly rising inflation, and certainly we don't expect rapidly rising inflation. Again, we're just of the opinion that we're returning to normal. So it's a situation where the short end has risen because of the Fed. The long end is sort of moving into a normal relationship. As we've talked about in the past also, short rates were really starting to compete with long rates. What we call a flat curve was the phenomena up until recently with the rise in longer-term rates. So with this, it makes longer-term rates relatively attractive again. Sometimes that can be competition for the stock market, as people say, well, I can get almost 3% on a U.S. Treasury security, so with very little risk, so I'm willing to accept that. Sometimes it's a little competition. I think the important lesson in all this from a bond market standpoint is that the bond market, despite what's happened recently, is a relatively stable investment over the longer run. I like to remind folks that over the last 40 years, there's only been 3 calendar years that the bond market has had a negative return, total return, for a broad market, intermediate term type of investment. So that tells you it's very rare for the bond market to have a negative return, a really difficult year. You can have a lot of swings during the year, but generally over time, those things will work itself out. So at this point, we're watching things, but it doesn't appear that there's a strong indication that rates would move dramatically higher from here, because this seems to be an equilibrium point for the time being, and given all the facts that we have in the economy at this point. So a fairly stiff
question that we got, if the stock market continues to decline, I know that there was talk that the Fed will probably move interest rates 3 times this year. Are they going to pay attention to the stock market and making those decisions, do you believe?
If you ask them, the answer would be no. The Fed does not will tell you that they don't really look at the stock market when they make those decisions. My personal opinion is that's not true, that they do. They look at everything. But they also realize that the stock market is not a very good indicator for near-term economic activity. There's a lot of fluctuation that goes into that calculus there. So, of course, we have a new Fed chairman in Jay Powell taking over at a challenging time when you get into what's happened in the stock market here just recently. But I really think the Fed's focus is fairly certain at this point two raises seem to be in the cards this year, probably three, unless we get a lot more stock market volatility. And given what we know in the economy, that seems fairly likely. So I think their path is fairly certain at this point.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. I'm going to switch gears a little bit. Something that's looming is a potential government shutdown. The government shut down, I think it was for a day or two last month.
3 days.
3 days last month. And they put in place a temporary spending bill to get us to this point where we're faced with the same possibility that the government shuts down. I think that is a bit of a concern for the market if that were to go on for an extended period of time. Bring us up to date, Richard, on where things stand with that looming deadline.
Sure will, Dave. As you said, there was a kick-the-can-down-the-road move several weeks ago where a short-term funding bill was passed just to kind of get the issue dealt with quickly, but it wasn't a long-term solution. We have two things to concern ourselves with. The funding of the government for the near-term and longer-term, as well as the potential for a debt, actually the need to deal with the debt ceiling, which we are rapidly approaching. And on that latter point, I will say that the debt ceiling issue has become a little bit more pressing than it was once the new tax bill was passed. And that's because, this is a double-edged sword here, but for the private sector, it's great. Withholding rates are going down, so people are going to see higher paychecks and less taxes taken out of their pay. And that means $10 to $15 billion a week is not going into the coffers of the Treasury. Therefore, the debt ceiling comes up quicker than it otherwise would. It's estimated that that will be an early March deadline that the debt ceiling must be raised or obligations are going to have to be shifted around because there's not going to be enough cash to pay everything that needs to be paid. So they've got that. Congress has that to deal with some pressure. In terms of the funding, there seems to be a likelihood that this could get kicked down the road again and another short-term funding bill comes in place very, very soon because there's still some looming issues that don't seem to be settled. And, that, you know, there's some chance that this recent market event might help create some urgency. I doubt if it will, but there's some talk that it might have the parties come to the table with a little more seriousness. Particularly that would be the case if this volatility continues and the market goes down further, which we certainly hope, you know, does not happen and don't think that will happen. The issue still comes back to immigration is the sticking point to the settling of a long-term funding bill for the government. On the one side, we've got the Democrats who want to have an immigration bill that's suitable to them, and the president made what many think was a pretty generous proposal for the DACA recipients. He wanted the thing that stuck in the craw of the Democrats was he wants to end chain migration, which of course is the ability for extended family members of DACA recipients to come in, which would be an awful lot of additional people, immigrants to come into the country. So that is something that's probably not going to get easily negotiated. On the other side, there's the issue in the budget of the defense hawks who want to have a significant increase in defense spending. The Democrats really don't want that to happen. So what looks like is in the works. It may not happen immediately, but down the road, there's a spending package that's being negotiated, and there needs to be more time to get that negotiated. It's about a $500 billion additional spend for the federal government, you know, not a small number. And for some Republicans, the number is getting to be unpalatably large. It does involve some infrastructure spending, which many would like to see, but the ticket's just getting very big. And I will say that this needs more time to be negotiated. It's not going to happen in a few days, certainly not this week. So the most likely outcome is for a short-term extension as this gets negotiated and these immigration spending and debt ceiling issues you know, get dealt with. But the debt ceiling has become the most urgent catalyst for all this. So more to come, and we'll talk about it further.
Thank you, Richard. And we're right at 9:30, so we'll go ahead and end the call there. If anyone has any additional questions or would like to talk about the recent market activity, please reach out to any of us on the call. We'd be happy to give you our thoughts in more detail. Join us again next month when we'll meet on March 6th. Thanks for joining, everyone.